Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Friends, welcome to Stand in the Gap Today. This is Dave Kistler along with Sam Rohr. Dr. Gary Dahl is away this week. We have a special guest today, only in segment one, that's going to be talking about what you have probably been seeing over the weekend, and that is the last-ditch attempt on the part of the left to take Donald Trump's election victory away. What am I talking about? Well, they're talking about the possibility of trying to persuade those that are members of what is called the Electoral College to cast their ballots for Hillary Clinton as opposed to Donald Trump. Friends, you may also know this, that what took place last Tuesday, while phenomenal, while obviously the work of God, was only a vote to determine who the 538 electorals in the Electoral College will be. And then on December 19, the Electoral College will meet and they will cast their ballots for the next president of the United States. Now, of course, the way that's typically done is the person who won the electoral votes for each state is the one who becomes president. But there is a push, a very dramatic and definite push. In fact, it's garnered just over 3 million people's signatures online that are in support of this. There is an attempt by those on the left, the George Soros group and others, to try to persuade these 538 members of the Electoral College to cast their ballots for Hillary Clinton instead of Donald Trump. Now, friends, if that were to happen, that would be unprecedented. It's never happened before, but it could potentially, and I emphasize the word potentially, could potentially be done. Now, again, we're not saying it's probable that that will happen, but there is an attempt to try to make that happen. We have as our guest today a gentleman who is a constitutional expert. He's been a teacher of government, history, and economics for 32 years. He is a former pastor, but he is also my twin brother, Dan. And so, Dan, I am so thrilled you're able to be on Stand in the Gap today with us. Thank you so much for joining the program.
Well, it's my privilege to be here and glad to be part of the discussion.
Well, Dan, we're glad to have you aboard. Let me jump right into the middle of this because I know your time is limited. Help us understand a little bit about what actually the Electoral College is, why it came into being in the first place, what were the framers trying to do, and then before we have to let you go, talk a little bit about the possibility that the election could be stolen from Trump via this attempt by those on the left to persuade the Electoral College members to vote for Hillary instead of Donald.
Well, Dave and Sam, the whole purpose behind the Electoral College system is to take the election away from being chosen directly by the people. There were a lot of issues that play when our founding fathers, you know, created the Electoral College system, but I guess the big one was fear of a vote being very close and the minority almost outweighing the majority because the vote was so close, and fear of turmoil in the nation, rioting, things of that nature. And they discussed several options before they actually came up with this plan, you know, to use the Electoral College system. When you vote, you go to the polling place and you see the president's name on the ballot, you know, and you cast your ballot. But actually what you're doing, you're not voting for that person. You're voting for electors who will vote for that person. Of course, the electors are chosen at the state level, most of the time by the political parties. And when you vote for that candidate for president, you're actually voting for electors who will actually their votes will go to Washington and elect the president. And, Dave, I wanted to say this about the Electoral College vote. The Electoral College will vote on December 19th, but those votes are actually sent to Washington, and they're opened on January 6th in the Senate, and the vote is actually counted in the United States Senate. So technically, the president will be elected on January the 6th by the Electoral College when those votes are counted in the Senate. And of course, every state gets the same number of electoral votes as they have representatives in Washington. For instance, I'll use California as an illustration. California has 55 electoral votes. That means they have 53 members of Congress in Washington and two senators, making 55 total representatives. They get the same number of electoral votes as they have representatives in Washington. Our state, Dave, of North Carolina, has 15 electoral votes. That means we have 13 members of Congress and two senators, making our 15 electoral votes. So you get the same number of votes as you have representatives. What is interesting, what makes the 538 electoral votes rather than 535, there's 435 members of the House, 100 senators, that's 535 total representatives. But D.C., Washington, D.C., gets three electoral votes. Now, they do not have any representation, obviously, in Washington. D.C. doesn't, but they do get three electoral votes because there are people who live in D.C. and, of course, vote, for president and so forth, so they get three electoral votes. They do not get representation in Washington because D.C. is the federal government. You can't give the federal government representation within itself. So there's 538 total electoral votes up for grabs in any presidential election. And, of course, one vote more than half of that, exactly half, would be 269. One vote more than half is 270, and that's why it takes 270 votes, electoral votes, to win the presidency.
Dan, let me ask you this. Some are saying that because, and again, we're getting some information we're going to try to share with you today. If we have it all together, we're trying to verify the validity of all of this. But Dan, going into the weekend, of course, Donald Trump, according to the numbers that have been tabulated up to that point, as far as the popular vote, he did not win going into the weekend the popular vote. Now, there were still a few states out there that I think still had not resolved their popular vote count. So it may turn out, and this is what we're trying to discover before the program ends, maybe he did ultimately will win the popular vote count. But going into the weekend, Hillary Clinton had won the popular vote, but Donald Trump won the electoral vote. So that is what's driving some of the left to say, hey, if you're a member of the Electoral College, you're one of those slated with casting a ballot for the next president, Donald Trump, change your ballot to Hillary because she won the popular vote. Dan, we remember well in 2001 that Al Gore won the popular vote while George W. Bush won the electoral vote. But that's not the first time. This is not the first time or the second time that has happened. This has actually happened a total of five times. So talk about that, if you would, please.
Well, if it turns out that Hillary Clinton did win the popular vote last Tuesday, that would be the fifth time out of 45 presidents, that would be the fifth time that the person who won the popular vote did not win the presidency. Four other times prior to, this past Tuesday has that happened. 2000 would have been one of them. Dave, one of the more interesting elections, I guess, to use as an illustration of this was the election of 1824. It was known as the favorite son's election. It was the election that John Quincy Adams became president. But how it happened is really illustration of how the founding fathers drew all this up. The favorite son's election had four presidential candidates in the race. Every section of the country, north, south, east, and west, chose a candidate. You had John Quincy Adams kind of representing the north. You had William Crawford from Georgia kind of representing the south. You had Andrew Jackson representing the west. And, of course, there was a fourth candidate in there. But those were the three big names that were in that election. And because of four candidates, obviously, nobody won a majority of the electoral vote. But what happened at that point, the election is thrown into the House of Representatives, and the House, voting by state, chooses, of course, the presidential candidate, and the guy they chose was John Quincy Adams, and he became our president.
Dan, interesting stuff. I wish we had more time to talk with you about this, but we'll try to get you back on again to discuss some of this further. But friends, when we come back from the break, there's been a lot of cries for unity over the weekend, and yet I want to issue a little bit of word of caution with respect to seeking unity. How do you unify with those that hate you and hate the policy positions upon which you stand? We're going to talk about that following the break. You're listening to Stand in the Gap. Stay.
Live, love, learn, and leave a legacy. These are great words, but if you want to leave a legacy to your children and grandchildren these days, it's going to take some careful planning. And that's where we come in. We're the Life Financial Group, advisors you can trust. We're Christian, families based upon the Bible, so that we can say we truly understand your values. In fact, for nearly 40 years, folks of all ages have counted on us to care for and grow their financial resources. Through prayer, prudent investment, and pleasant, knowledgeable people, we can help you navigate your investments so you feel secure. We're glad to offer morally clean investment options that won't sear your conscience or make you anxious. We're also comfortable talking about increasing the impact of your charitable giving. How do we make a difference? So learn how you can have peace of mind by calling us today at 610-385-4500. That's 610-385-4500 or online at thelifegroup.org. That's thelifegroup.org.
Securities and advisory services offered through Genius Wealth Management, member FINRA and SIPC.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
Born a slave, he taught himself to read and attended school after working all day. At age 25, he founded the Tuskegee Institute and recruited George Washington Carver to join the staff. At the time of his death, which occurred this day, November 14, 1915, the school had grown to over 1,500 students. His name was Booker T. Washington, and he was the first black to have his picture on a U.S. postage stamp and a U.S. coin. He was also the first black elected to the Hall of Fame. Booker T. Washington declared, "I shall allow no man to belittle my soul by making me hate him."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
Please join us for the free Veterans Expo and Job Fair, November 15th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Spooky Nook Sports, Mannheim. The Veterans Expo connects active and retired military members and their families with benefits and resources. The Job Fair allows veterans and employers to discuss available positions. For more information, visit veteransexpo.com. More than 100 exhibitors and sponsors include Blue Ridge Communications, Disabled American Veterans, Fulton Financial Corporation, LCTV, Pennsylvania American Legion, Pennsylvania National Guard Outreach Office, Pennsylvania State Headquarters VFW, PHEAA, Triangle Refrigeration, HVAC, Plumbing, and Energy Management, the Sigmund Network, WHTM ABC 27, Worley and Obits Incorporated, and WFYL. For more information, visit veteransexpo.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Sam, I want to go to you right out of the break here and ask you a question with respect to what Dan was sharing with us in the first segment, and that is with respect to the Electoral College. Our framers of the Constitution wanted there to be a little bit of distance between the actual people doing the voting and then the process that resulted as far as who was chosen. And so they came up with this idea of an electoral college. Now, I know the electoral college has fallen into a lot of criticism of late, but the point I think Dan was trying to make while sharing a lot of fascinating information with us was the fact that our founders in wisdom were trying to stop there from being a divided nation. Now, understand, we have had a lot of division in this nation over the last 8 years. We've had a lot of division since last Tuesday. We've got some protests going on in the streets of America's major cities. But, Sam, if you could speak just a little bit further here in this second segment to the wisdom of the founders in creating what is probably the most misunderstood aspect of our electoral system, and that is this electoral college process.
Well, Dave, the idea really is found all the way through our representative republic, and there's a principle, a theme that moves it in the way of what we call a representative republic. It is not a democracy. Our founders intended that it never be set up where it was a 1-for-1 vote of the majority, because when that happens, you actually overrule the ability of the minority to have any voice. And so even in the selection process for representatives within Congress in the legislative branch, it was that these individuals were elected. Now, obviously, it's been changed by the 17th Amendment, the way we elect senators, but it was elected representatives, a certain number of representatives in each of the state houses and in Washington, reflecting a certain number of people, citizens. But then the Senate came into relationship to represent the fact that there were some states that were very small, like a Delaware or a Maryland, small in size of geography, small in size of population, perhaps to a very large area. And in order to provide some kind of equivalency, that's where the Senate came up, and every state got two. Now, even then, originally, it was set up that the Senate, the U.S. Senate that went from the states, originally were set up where the representatives in the states, they were the ones who actually selected the representatives from that state that went to Washington in the form of U.S. senators. They were not directly elected by the people as they are now. And frankly, I think one of the worst things that happened was, in fact, that amendment where the Senate, U.S. Senate, became popularly elected, because their purpose was that they were responsible to those elected by the people, representatives, and they were therefore responsible to carry out the wishes of the state, of that particular state from which they came. That was to be a balancing act between the popularly elected federal congressman and the state related, state connected U.S. Senate that went from there. But you see, we got off of that. And now you have the Senate and the Congress, both popularly elected, and they really have become part of the problem together. There's no check and balance between the Senate and the House in Washington. And the result of that is they both determine how much money they can steal from the taxpayer and bring back home and hand out in the form of largesse. That has become a real problem. But they tried to get away with that. The Electoral College really is the same in theory, same in principle. They didn't want to have a popularly elected, as in a democracy, president of the United States. The Electoral College was a rather ingenious mechanism by which they could keep that sense of the representative of the state, as your brother just explained, one per each congressman by that state, and then one for each of the Senate, so that there would be a balance. Now, imagine this. You have a California as an example. California has a big population because it's warm, people like to go there, and it's a big state. But think of the matter is, if the state of California perhaps had 20% of the population of the entire nation. Very possible because of the size. Well, if you got them all in lockstep, Dave, they could absolutely override the votes of maybe of 20 other, 20% of the other states. So it was a balancing act to give some representation. And really, it was fairly ingenious how they did it. So before people talk about get rid of it, we need to think, why do they want to get rid of it? What are they trying to accomplish? And I'd say most of those wanting to get rid of it, Dave, are really those who like to think that we're a democracy, not a republic.
You know, Sam, one of the things that I think is a real tragedy across the United States of America within our educational system is that civics is no longer taught in schools. Certainly it's not taught in public schools. In a lot of Christian schools, tragically across the nation, civics is not taught. One of the things my brother has done for years is he teaches civics, and he teaches it powerfully. He gets his young people in his classes involved in the process. He gets them to go out and work the polls at election time. And he does all of these things so that they learn not only in theory what the country and what the founders ingeniously, as you said, came up with this electoral process. He wants them to know it, not just in theory. He wants them to know it practically by being involved. And, Sam, that's what's so unfortunate. We have people out there talking about getting rid of the Electoral College system, and they have no clue that the founders, the framers of the Constitution, were brilliant. God gave them the wisdom to come up with this system so that smaller states, as you well said, were not overrun by the larger states. And then you have one group of people in the country running roughshod over others because our founders understood human nature.
Dave, that's exactly correct. And, you know, and frankly, as far as that goes, you talk about that, we could do a whole program on it. By and large, the left, through subverting the educational process, have absolutely separated an entire generation or more of American citizens from the basic principles that make us who we are, not just in response, not in regard to civics and a representative republic, but the basic biblical principles that underlie every aspect of our Declaration of Independence and the rights contained within the Constitution, the balance of power, the purpose of government, the purpose of law, the meaning of justice, all of these things are biblical principles. And if you excise those out and you surgically remove them from our history, Dave, you actually have a generation that looks pretty much like we have today in this country, where you've got 50% approximately who'd say, I don't care who this person is. I think it's more important to put a woman in office, a Hillary, an example, those who voted there, than it is for putting someone who believes that there's an important thing called the Constitution and a very critical thing called called justice within the Department of Justice. So Dave, it's been a very carefully executed ploy and strategy, and part of getting back now and rebuilding the broken walls in this country are going to be for God's people, for constitutionalists, for all of those who are honest in their view of history, to be saying, we've got to start shoring up these basic principles that have made us great, that have been undermined, because if we are going to be returned to greatness in this country, it is going to be by reinstituting the same foundational biblical principles into our thinking and into our action. Other Dave, we'll never get back to what we were.
Sam, I think it would be appropriate right now. One of our sponsors on this program is BJU Press. And Sam, BJU Press, their textbooks when it comes to history, civics, government, economics, not only deal with the aspect that you just addressed, and that is the biblical underpinnings of our republic, our constitutional republic, and what drove the founders to do what they did. Their textbooks also deal with this missing component that is just so glaringly absent in the educational system currently, and that is the lack of an understanding of just basic civics. BJU Press, friends, does an excellent, excellent job. And so, friends, I want to encourage you, you should look into their textbooks. If you're a homeschooler, if you are in private education, maybe you're an administrator and you've not looked into their textbooks, you need to do so, because the very thing that is so glaringly absent in the educational process today, they deal with, and they deal with it in a thorough and very biblical and constitutional way. Sam, I want to say one other thing. What we do need to do at some point is get my brother onto the program. The three of us, or the four of us with Gary included, can have a discussion of the things that we are talking about, just touching on the surface here, and that is the fact that we are not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic. But what does that mean? What does that mean as that is fleshed out in the electoral process? And again, the wisdom, Sam, the incredible, phenomenal wisdom of the founders will be seen in that kind of discussion. So, Sam, at some point, we need to have that kind of discussion on radio.
We do, in fact, Dave. And see, part of the rebuilding process, you know, we've talked about it here, but we're on this side of the election looking back. We're thanking God for what he did in a miraculous way on last Tuesday. But now God's people and all of those who understand freedom must be thinking of, what now do we do? What do we do to repair the walls, the pillars that have been undermined by the termites of those opposed to freedom? And it includes the kinds of things that you're talking about. It is honesty in regard to history. It is honesty in regard to the role that the pulpits of America have played. It is honesty in regard to biblical principles and a biblical worldview, Dave, that made America great, but also the kinds of things that, if employed, can make any nation anywhere in history great. That's what the beauty of God, of the principles of biblical truth do.
Sam, incredible statement you just made. Friends, you're not going to get this kind of instruction on any other radio program anywhere in the United States of America, and we're committed to bringing you the truth, both biblically and constitutionally. When we come back, we're going to talk about this cry for unity that's being heard all across the nation. Is it something that Donald Trump should buy into? Join us after the break.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
Fox News Radio, I'm Anna Wells. President Obama heads to Greece tonight.
The president's final overseas trip begins in Athens, where he'll tour the Parthenon, give a speech about globalization, and meet with Greece's prime minister. He'll then travel to Germany to have dinner with Chancellor Angela Merkel and also meet with British Prime Minister Theresa May and French President Francois Hollande. The president will then attend an Asia Economic Summit in Peru.
Fox's John Decker, before he leaves, Mr. Obama will hold his first post-election news conference. An accused cop killer is captured in California.
David Machado is behind bars, accused of killing a Stanislaus County sheriff's deputy and then going on a crime spree across more than 100 miles. Deputy Dennis Wallace was shot twice in the head Sunday morning as he checked on a report of a suspicious van. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
Fox News, we report, you decide.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom, shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom, shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
WFYL, this is Russ.
Russ, I'm going to be out of the area this weekend, and I still want to hear your station. Can you help me out?
I sure can. In fact, you can listen absolutely anywhere you go and anytime. Go to our website, 1180WFYL.com, on your favorite mobile device. That's 1180WFYL.com, and click Listen Live.
That's all it takes?
That's all it takes. Also, if you are in the car, I would advise you not to look at your phone. The best solution I can recommend is the TuneIn app, available on the Apple and Android app stores for free. TuneIn has a car mode in order to make listening and driving safer. Keep in mind that this will use your mobile data, which could result in extra charges from your mobile provider. Be sure to check your plan before using the stream.
That sounds great, Russ. Thank you so much for your help.
Thank you for calling in for listening. Drive safe and God bless.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Since Tuesday evening, the cries for unity have been incessant, and friends, they've come from both sides of the aisle. However, over the last 5 days, we've witnessed rioting in America's major cities, further highlighting and underscoring the deep divisions that exist in our nation. Sam, I find it very, very interesting that none of these appeals for unity occurred during the last 8 years while Obama has been president. In fact, to the contrary, Obama even stated, and he stated it emphatically, elections have consequences. I won. Barack Obama said. And then he said this, Sam, we don't mind having Republicans participating in the process, but they have to sit in the back of the bus. Friends, do you remember him making that statement? Because I do vividly. I want to issue a strong warning here. In fact, it's just a word of caution with respect to this appeal for unity. I understand. I do. I really understand the cries for unity that we're hearing across the country. I understand and agree that a unified nation is vitally important. But here's my word of caution that I think is desperately needed. elections do have consequences. With that, the president was 100% correct. In fact, they're supposed to have consequences. And the election this past Tuesday, in that election, the American people did not turn out in record numbers for Trump and team to unify with a party or an ideology or individuals who hate both them, and I'm talking about those who voted in overwhelming numbers for Donald Trump and the platform on which he stands. We did not vote that way to unify with those that hate us and the principles on which we stand. So, friends, Tuesday was a wholesale rejection of all that has been both Obama and Hillary. So could I say this to our president-elect? Yes, be conciliatory as you have been and as you have masterfully done over the last 5 days. Be conciliatory in tone and in approach, but never, never, I repeat, never, for the sake of quote-unquote unity, coalesce with respect to the platform principles and campaign promises that earned you, Mr. Trump, the vote of the American people. Especially don't turn your back and, for the sake of unity, do anything to alienate those who voted like they haven't voted in the last four elections, and that is the Christian community. No, stand squarely there and govern from that position, because biblical truth and history are both definitely on your side. Sam, I want to ask you a question. Am I off base by making that statement, or would you agree?
No, Dave, you already answered your question. I think you did a very eloquent job of doing it, because the position that you stated is exactly correct. You see, leading in office in a civil government position is all about, at the end of the day, policy. It is about direction. It is about law, regulations, what they do, who they impact, and why they're made. And properly understood, we understand that underneath every law, every regulation is somebody's morality. It's not a matter of if, it is what. And that is ultimately what drives policy. So when you say, Mr. President-elect Trump, do not forget who put you there, is exactly correct, because there is a view of the world. We talk about biblical worldview. We just talked about last segment, Dave. You did. A biblical worldview has a definitive view, clear view on the purpose and the role of government. It also has a very clear and purposeful view on who God is. Is he a creator? Did he make us? Do we have a responsibility to him? Or is there no God? Can government become God? Because, Dave, this is really the distinction between these two party platforms that we just went through, and the American people have said, no, we don't want government as God telling us everything that we have to do in our life. We don't want a centralized government that competes with self-government, which is what we are in a representative republic. And we are tired of this government stealing from us what we earn in taxes and telling us what we can or cannot do with our properties, a fundamental provision of the first part of the Declaration of Independence. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, property, use of property, and the way, and that's what it all means. This is what the people said, Dave. And so you cannot compromise on two polar positions. You cannot say God is God and government is God. You can't. You can't do that. And so you've got to go down the path of saying that. So you are totally correct. But on the other hand, I can say from being in office, when you are in office, elected by the people, you are responsible to administer the law, to, in the consideration of new law, make sure, in fact, that it is being applied equally to all people, justly and appropriately. That is a matter of justice. Not like this last administration that says that some laws are above the people, that some people are above the laws, that kind of thing. No, it applies to all. and that you will, in your capacity, whether you are a conservative Republican and you have a liberal Democrat who comes in and wants something done under the law, you got to treat them as equally, as importantly serve their interest within the law as the person that you know who voted for you. Dave, that is where there is unity. But Dave, the responsibility goes both ways. It's the responsibility of those who are in office, but it's also the responsibility of the citizen to say the citizens have spoken. And we can go down this road, but that is a major problem with these rioters out there today. They're not doing their civic duty.
No, I agree they're not, Sam. In fact, we could go there. In fact, we probably will go there a little bit later. But I want to jump off on something and ask you a question. Back last year at the National Day of Prayer event, one of the speakers was Congressman Louie Gohmert, and every year he gives an update at the National Day of Prayer event from the congressional side. And boy, this past May, he gave one of the most impassioned, not speeches, sermons I have ever heard in my life. And he said this. He said, have you ever wondered why you can elect good people? I mean, you know they're good people. You live next door to these people that have chosen to run for elected office. You've known them for decades. They're solid people. They have core principles. And yet once they're elected to Congress or maybe to the Senate, they go to Washington, D.C., and they just don't do, they don't accomplish what they campaigned on. He said, let me tell you why some of that happens. He said, as soon as they get to D.C., here is what is said to them by the leadership, even on, and he hammered down on the GOP side. They say this to you: we're so glad you're here. You're going to be part of changing not only the nation, but impacting the world. But what we need you to be is a team player. And this is the leadership talking to the newly elected congressman or senator. We need you to be a team player. Yes, we're going to get to what you campaigned on, but we're going to do it incrementally. We're going to do it little step by little step. But, man, you don't want to be out there on your own like, you know, a Louie Gohmert. You don't want to be an island to yourself like a Michelle Bachmann. You know, those people are the ones, according to the leadership, as they talk to these newly elected representatives, they're the ones that are in it for themselves. You don't want to be one of them. We need you to be a team player. And so he said what happens is everybody wants to be part of the team, and they want to get their agenda accomplished. They want to play, you know, ball as a team plays. So they go through 2 years. They get up for reelection again, and they get reelected, and then the leadership comes and says, look, we're so glad you've been reelected. Yes, I know we didn't get a lot done the last session. But we're going to get to it, but we need you to be a team player. And he kept stressing how they urge you need to be a team player. And he said, what we need, Congressman Gohmert said, is not team players. We need people who are elected to come up here and do a job and get the job done. Sam, I can already hear, I can already feel, I can already sense, you know, all of these people on the Hill going to Mr. Trump, to his team, to the newly elected congressmen and senators and saying, we need you to be a team player. Yeah, we know you have an agenda. We'll get there eventually, but just don't do it too aggressively. Sam, what we need is somebody accomplishing the task for which they were elected and doing it aggressively, not this team player, the way they say it, the way the leadership intends it, not that kind of concept.
Well, Dave, I'm gonna put another twist on it. I don't have a what you said is exactly correct. I'll start there. You know, I don't have a problem with being a team player, because when you go in representation and you sit down as a General Assembly member or a congressional member, you are in fact part of a team. The question is, Dave, what's the objective? What's your game plan? As your team.
Where's the goal line?
That's correct. And this is where it is, Dave. This is the distinction. The problem, as Louie Gohmert was describing, and this has been the problem, is that the game plan has been all along, what are we going to do to provide special treatment to our special interests who are our friends? That's a problem. The thing should be, we're all on the same team to come down here and to best represent our citizens in the context of and in the framework of our constitutional oath. Dave, if that were the goal for the president, for the majority leader in the House, in the Senate, and the Speaker, and they were all on board with what the one common thing is that they go there and they promise to uphold and to defend the Constitution of the United States for the purpose of protecting and advancing the constitutional rights of the citizens. If in fact that were the song sheet, the plans, the goals, on that, if they were to commit to be team players, Dave, we would have never seen such a gigantic difference in the history of our country. It's a matter of what are your rules and where are your goals. I submit, be a team player, but be a team player in regard to the Constitution and defending citizens' rights.
Yeah, Sam, to be honest with you, some of these guys that say they're on our team, Sam, I wonder if they're on the team. They're definitely not on the team trying to accomplish the agenda that you just laid out. They're trying to accomplish something that's going to advance them or line the pockets of those that are special interest to them. Friends, when we come back from the break, on Friday, Donald Trump and his team announced a major change within the transition team. VP Mike Pence was announced to be the chairman of the transition team, replacing Governor Chris Christie. What does all that mean, and was there a message being sent? We're going to talk about that right after this brief timeout.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Securities and advisory services offered through Genius Wealth Management, member FINRA and SIPC.
Today, people are living longer than their forebears. Right now, more than 1 million Americans are alive past age 100. That means you need to work toward having financial resources that can give you independence into your golden years. But weighing different investment options may make you feel overwhelmed. You need someone, a trusted friend, who can come alongside and help you keep the complex simple. That's where the Life Financial Group comes in. For nearly 40 years, the Life Financial Group has helped thousands of families, not only here in Pennsylvania, but nationwide, become even better financial stewards of God's blessings. Managing your investments may feel challenging, but by using a complete financial stewardship approach, you too can gain confidence and peace of mind that your wealth is protected and that you maintain your financial independence. With morally clean investment options, we can help you reach your goals while honoring your convictions. Call us at the Life Financial Group today at 610-385-4500 or online at thelifegroup.org. That's thelifegroup.org.
Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School is an online public school for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Founded in 2004, our mission is to have a school where children can see the world, develop character, promote independence, and become lifelong learners. We teach our students to be leaders, thinkers, and scientists. They are taught to be logical and critical in thinking. Some of our classical teaching methods range from online class lectures to debates to Socratic teaching, which develops the art of speaking and writing. We encourage our students to be well-rounded by participating in sports, the arts, and their communities. Your child can benefit from this style of innovative education. Visit us at palcs.org or call 1-877-725-2785.
Hey, Grandma, could you help me with this Common Core lesson? I just can't get it. They are teaching us to use emotional words to get our way. In my Voices workbook, see this question? My mom always nags me or asks me to clean my room. I chose asks me, and it was wrong. They want me to say she nagged me, but I didn't think that was fair or nice. Why was I wrong?
Oh, honey, you were right. That isn't nice. These Common Core lessons are awful.
Get Common Core.
or out of your state. If you made this your one and only project, you could change the country. Learn more about Federal Common Core and Pennsylvania Core standards and call your representatives today. Ask them to stop the national takeover of education. Go to PARestoringEducation.org or call Richard at 484-678-2236. This message brought to you by Pennsylvanians Restoring Education.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Again, friends, on Friday, the Trump team announced a major change with its transition team. VP Mike Pence was announced that he would now be the chairman of that transition team, replacing Governor Chris Christie. Sam, I want to say this. I was obviously on Tuesday evening in the early morning hours of Wednesday morning. I was beside myself with excitement. I alternated back and forth between my hands lifted in praise to the God of heaven, to petitions to the God of heaven that what we were watching take place would not be altered and that the direction it looked as if it were going early on Tuesday evening would actually continue and that Donald Trump would win. All of that took place. I was beyond excited about it. Not near as excited, but close to it was how I felt when I heard on Friday that Mike Pence was going to be in charge of the transition team serving as its chairman. I want to ask you this, Sam. Chris Christie was an individual that was of great concern to a lot of us that have a very strong commitment to the Constitution, to the rule of law, to justice as it is described and defined in the Bible, and certainly the way our founders intended justice to be defined. So when Chris Christie was part of the mix, I had apprehension about that. I had deep concern. Well, all of those concerns with respect to the transition team were alleviated by this decision by Trump and his team to put Mike Pence in. Am I making too much out of this move, or, Sam, is this a significant, significant change?
Dave, no, it is a significant change. Excuse me. And actually, on Friday of this program, you were not here, but we had two guests, both of them from UnderstandingTheThreat.com. We talked about the importance of the transitionary period of time in which we are in. And it was not long after we talked about it on this program about the concerns of Chris Christie. And I'll say what they were. The concerns about Chris Christie is that not just is he has two close establishment ties, but he also has legal things hanging over his head and that they're actually going to some of the members of the New Jersey legislature are talking about implementing impeachment procedures against him as governor because of the problem. He was the Bridgegate thing they called it. He was involved in there or allegedly involved in New Jersey. But the other was that he has had two close connections with Islamic Brotherhood individuals. That is a very, very, very key concern for those individuals as they're trying to worm their way into positions within the new Trump administration. Because as we've said before, Muslim Brotherhood jihadist individuals are embedded throughout this current Obama administration. And so that's a big concern. And so when Christie was in that position, there were people that were commenting, that were contacting, and I was very, very glad that that the president chose to, for all those reasons, probably at least, or maybe not more, to remove him from that position and to put Vice President candidate-elect Mike Pence in charge of it. So, Dave, there were many reasons to be glad for now this person, Mike Pence, being in charge. And again, it's because the transition team, these 4,700 ultimately employees that are going to be appointed as a part of the new administration, is very, 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 very key. And frankly, Dave, it's something we prayed about on this program, and I want to encourage our listeners to continue to pray critically about in these days going forward, because we're glad what happened on Tuesday, but we prayed hard then. We need to pray even harder, regularly, and continually for a long time to come, coming up into the future here.
Sam, I don't think people fully understand. You used the figure 4,700 employees that are going to be chosen, selected during this transition time. And at the head of that is Mike Pence, who is a committed Christian. He understands the threat that Islam poses. So what you're saying, Sam, and this, again, if I understand everything correctly, and I believe I do, but the fact is, Sam, what you're saying is these people that are going to be selected, if they are reflective of the kind of man Mike Pence is and the kind of philosophy that he holds and the rest of the Trump team holds, which is a understanding of the threat posed by Islamic entities, an understanding of the threat posed by those that are of the establishment and promoting the establishment only, it means this: what a Trump administration is going to look like is going to be the polar opposite, potentially, the polar opposite of what we've had for the last 8 years. So, Sam, this is phenomenally good news.
Well, it is good news, and it's important for all of our listeners to understand that when so many people prayed for and then the election turned out as it was in fact for a change. Dave, you cannot have a change unless you put people in the positions who reflect that ideology towards what the role of government is, what the purpose of the Constitution is. You have to put people in place who are thinking alike. Otherwise, you will have forever a headache and people working behind the scenes to obstruct the changes that are made. I use the illustration of this. Right now, you're going to have a flock of sheep coming into the government. The new one, if it's 4,700. There are wolves already lined up in sheep's clothing. They want to come in with the sheep, but to do mayhem and major obstruction. There are also termites that are wanting to come in with the lumber that is using to be built this new administration, put it in illustrative terms. And you've got to keep out the termites. This is one of the things that we need to pray about, that people of right intentions, of right thinking meaning right moral thinking, right constitutional thinking, are come into place, not just as cabinet leaders, secretaries of cabinets, heads of the Homeland Security, head of the Defense Department, head of the FBI, all those kinds of things, but all the way down, mid-level and lower-level management positions that are within those departments. This is critical, and many times administrations will fail, Dave, because they do not exercise the right kind of thought and care at this point in the process.
Sam, I tell you what, I can tell you're not just a man who's run for elected office. I can tell you're a preacher because you use excellent illustrations. Two excellent analogies, wolves and termites. One, more of an immediate threat, that being the wolves. The other, more of a long-term threat, that being the termites. But if this government, in fact, not just the government, if this nation is going to survive, you've got to deal with both, the wolves and the termites. Outstanding analogy. Sam, let me ask you one final question before we have to end the program today. And by the way, friends, we want to tell you this up front. Please join us tomorrow. Our special guest is going to be former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. We're going to look into some of the things that are taking place with the transition. We're going to talk about some long-term impact of the Trump administration and get her perspective as a member of that spiritual advisory council that Donald Trump has so wisely chosen. And so you will not want to miss tomorrow's program. Sam, with respect to that, is there a possibility, based on what Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann shared last time she was on the program, is it possible, because of the intense influence that the Spiritual Advisory Council is having, is it possible in your mind that the reason Mike Pence was put in the position of being chairman of the transition was because that was advice given to Donald by this council of people who understand how critical the things you've just described, the appointing of these people, these 4,700 positions, how critically important that is?
Dave, I cannot confirm that. I don't know that for sure, that was a direct result of that. But I would suspect that this part of it. Donald Trump does put a great deal of stock on that counsel that he is given. He does know that the powers that he ran up against in the election, the globalists, the Islamists, the establishment, he knows who they are, and I believe that this is part of parcel. It's all working together, Dave. Part of it he knows, part of it is counsel, I believe.
Excellent, excellent comment, Sam. I would concur completely. Friends, this has been Standing the Gap today. Dave Kistler, Sam Rohr. Our special guest in segment one was my twin brother, Dan. We're going to try to get him back on again. I think a discussion of civics is going to be in order at some point. I think you'll enjoy that and learn a lot from it. Don't miss tomorrow's program. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, former congresswoman, will be with us tomorrow. It's going to be an eye-opening program. 23 hours from now, join us again for more Standing the Gap today. Have a blessed afternoon.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler, brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
Broadcasting live from historic West Norriton Township,
this is AM 1180.
AM 1180. WFYL.